Salutations, and welcome to Radio Days, a podcast radio program that delves into the world of terrestrial radio. It's DJs and on-air personality, and you, all fans of radio as a medium. Here's your host, Ron.
Hello, and welcome to episode 2 of season 4, Radio Days, the podcast. You know, you can hear this podcast on Buzzsprout, as well as all major podcast platforms like Spotify, Google Podcasts. You can also watch this podcast via YouTube as well as at my website, RonRobinsonStudios.com. Radio Days, the podcast, is sponsored today by Radio Days, 101 Years of Radio. A lot of Radio Days in there. This is a new docuseries about the history of terrestrial radio. You can hear the story from those who lived it. Dick Pertin, Doug Podell, Duke Fakur, Big Jim Edwards, Ken Calvert, Jill Forsythe, just to name a few of the scores of radio personalities and historians who appear in this docuseries. You can also watch the entire 5-part documentary on the free streaming service Reveal, which is R-E-V-E-E-L, Reveal. It's a free streaming service, as well as Vimeo. You can watch that on demand. You can rent it or purchase it, and you can find out more about that at my website, RonRobinsonStudios.com. My guest today is one of those radio personalities who appears in this docuseries, and he was fantastic, told a lot of great stories. Radio Days, 101 Years of Radio is another place you can hear my guest. He's been heard on WJR 760, WDFN in Detroit, as well as WSPD in Toledo. Currently, he can be heard on his very brand new podcast called Off the Air. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome fellow Specs Howard alum, Mr. Sean Belegian. Sean, how are you, my friend?
Excellent. It's a pleasure to chat with you again, bud. Congratulations on everything so far, including this fantastic venture you're involved with now.
Yeah, no, it's 9 years. My first interview was with Dick Kernan. My last was with Ken Calvert. So it took nine years to put that together. So thank you again for being a part of it, man.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It's a, you know, that's the one thing that I think a lot of people like guests have in common. There is a love for radio there, and it's never going to die. I know that the medium has changed. The industry has changed so much.
Right, right.
I've been joking a lot the last few months. I still love radio. I'm not sure radio loves me, but I'm always going to love radio. I mean, it was something that, you know, I grew up with and listening in bed at night and everything. So yeah, it's a love affair that's never going to end. Ron, honestly, I think it's just one of the best things out there. I really do.
So before we get into your career, Sean, I want to ask you what, and this is a common question I ask a lot of my guests, what were you listening to on the radio growing up?
I think like so many other kids, especially sports fans, it was, you know, listening to Tiger games, you know, on WJR, listening to the great Ernie Harwell, staying up late at night and listening to Red Wing games and, you know, telling my mom and dad I was asleep and, you know, putting that transistor radio right underneath my pillow and just turning it up just enough where only I could hear it, but it couldn't go throughout the door. So that was obviously something that I listened to. And then, you know, when Casey Kasem and America's Top 40 started, yeah, like every other kid, that was like the cool thing on a Sunday morning, you know, is to try to listen to that and write down the songs as fast as you could and everything. So,
well, that was the only way that was the only way you could find out what was number one. That was the only
100%.
Way.
100%. Yeah, 100%. You know, and that's even before, remember, they had that America's Top 10 that started on television. That's even before that started on television. So I had a very eclectic taste in music. I mean, like so many other guys where I grew up, you know, I liked the rock stuff. You know, I was into AC/DC and Black Sabbath and Ronnie James Dio and everything, but I had an incredibly eclectic taste in music, and that continues until this day.
So we listened to some of the programming, but obviously you grew up in the Detroit area. Who were some of the personalities that you enjoyed listening to? Obviously you said Casey, but some of the local guys, talk about that.
Oh my gosh. I mean, like so many other kids, I mean, Arthur P was unbelievable. You know, the 5 o'clock whistle and, you know, it's Maui time and all of
it's
that.
It's the weekend.
Yeah, right. I mean, that was and Q Weekend Warriors, you know, that you would roll with that and love JJ and the Morning Crew, man. That was, for me, that was driving to school in high school, you know, having on JJ and the Morning Crew and listening to that. And, you know, I thought they had a fun run on wheels. I really enjoyed their run on wheels. And, And then like so many other guys, you know, and I've said this to Drew Lane himself. I mean, to me, being in college and finishing up school and trying to get into this business, it is synonymous with listening to Drew and Mike going yeah. back to the summer of 94 and their OJ coverage. I mean, it was side splitting stuff. And Ron, that was always, to me, that's always the telltale sign is when you don't want to get out of your car. Yeah. When you're sitting in your car, even though you know you're going to be late, guys are doing something right. And it was like that every day for me with Drew and Mike in that era, you know, the whole summer of OJ.
Oh, not just OJ, but look at all the other thing. They had the Mr. Harris. They had bell for blows. Was there anything more funny when they would ring the bell when they could get the donut shop terrorism bell for blows? I mean, and
so
that,
good.
And then the calls that they would get numbers of celebrities in hotels and they would just call them and just they were so good, top to bottom,
100%.
All three of them. Yeah, Trudy as well.
Oh. Absolutely. You know, I think Drew is just brilliant. I think he's brilliant beyond his years. I think, you know, to this day, some of the stuff that guy does, you know,
he's still killing it.
Yeah. It's just thinking next level. I mean, that's the way he's been for so long. So yeah. And you know what, then I went through that phase where, I mean, it was Lisa. Everybody was listening to Lisa for a while too. So, the electrifying mojo.
Oh my
I mean,
gosh.
I fell in love with radio long before I even realized that was something I wanted to get into. There's something, I know it sounds cheesy, but the whole theater of the mind and everything, there's certainly validity to that.
So much like you and myself, there's a lot of people out there who grew up listening to radio, loving the medium, but it's another thing to jump into that spectrum. Talk about what made you decide to get into broadcasting and talk a little bit about your time at Specs Howard, if you would.
I couldn't imagine, even now, I couldn't imagine doing anything different with my life than what I've done in the last 30 years. No regrets, you know, well, some regrets, but they're minor regrets. They're not regrets where you say, oh, I should have done something else in life. You know, maybe I shouldn't have jumped into that job. Maybe I shouldn't have jumped into that job, but they're all so minor. I wouldn't have changed a darn thing, Ron. Not a darn thing. And, you know, I tell young people all the time, you know, I'm not sure you know what you're getting into. You know, I mean, like so many other guys, Ron, and I'm sure you included, you know, you're asked to speak to young people or a young person will reach out to you. And I always say the same thing. It isn't the same industry. You know, when I broke in 1995, it was a different industry. It's you know, sadly, it's an industry right now that I don't want to say it's on its last breath, but it needs a new breath. There's no doubt about that. And I'm not sure where it's coming from, but it's also a tough business and I don't sugarcoat it for anybody. I loved my experience at Specs. Absolutely loved it. You know, Dick Kernan, I'm going to join in the parade of people saying wonderful things about Dick. Dick challenged me. Dick saw something in me at a time that I didn't think I saw it in me. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so, you know, Tom Proffitt was a guy and Jim Bell. And I always called him Mike Palmateer, former Maple Leaf goaltender. You know, so for me, having those guys have the impact that they did. And quite frankly, Ron, I'm old enough to say it now and you don't feel like a big wimp about it. Giving me the confidence I didn't have in myself.
Yeah.
You know, I think at that age you try to convey a confidence, but deep down inside, you know, I had serious doubts because, you know, I mean, to this day, I hope and pray that, you know, puberty hits and my voice deepens, but I think by now I'm 53, I don't think it's going to happen, but, they gave me a confidence, that I didn't really have in myself. And I would vouch for that experience every day for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
It worked wonders for me. You know what? I was a guy who was fortunate. You know, I had college behind me, but Specs was that final push, and that was pretty cool.
You know, earlier you were talking at the beginning of your answer, you were talking about like going back. They asked me to come back and speak to a graduating class like 2019, right before COVID. And you want to talk about, I went and I spoke just like you said, look, this is hard. You got to want it. You gotta say yes to things that you might, you know, to do. You gotta want it. You gotta try. And after I was done, I went back in the lobby And I was waiting to, if anybody wanted to come and talk to me. And I'm not kidding, Sean. I had never met the man, but I saw him right away because I knew what he looks like. Willie Horton walked up to me.
Wow.
His granddaughter had just graduated. He came over and he said, "Hey, I want to thank you for that." Because that speech, he just gave me accolades for my speech. And I was like, did I die and go to heaven? Willie Horton just approached me and said that I did something good. Are you kidding me? So that's the kind of stuff that happens in broadcasting. Yeah. And I do want to ask you a couple more questions about Specs Howard, but to that point, let's just jump into it. Can you talk to me about some of the cool things you were like, I can't believe this is happening. This doesn't happen if I'm not radio broadcasting.
There are, Ron, I could waste the next 15 minutes of your life. I mean, there are things that I look back on. I think while it's happening, you don't take the time to smell the roses, right? You know, while it's happening, you're kind of going with the flow, especially, you know, when you're having some success, you're kind of focused on the next thing. And, you know, whether it be going to Super Bowls, whether it be going to Stanley Cups, whether it be, you know, on Radio Row, whether it be guys that I covered that legitimately became friends, like friends, not right. just guys that I know, but friends. And
Darren McCarty, right? One of the things, you know.
Yeah, for, you know, Lomas Brown. I mean, you know, so many guys in particular in the hockey world from, you know, calling so many games and doing so many different shows that, yeah, it really is. I've probably thought about it more in the past few months than I had in the previous 29 years, you know, because like I said, and I'm not having a pity party or anything like that. I think it's important to know when it's time to go do something else. I've kind of come to grips with the fact that I'm probably not going to get another job in radio. And I'm cool with that. Right. You know, I've got enough going on in my life where, you know, I'm calling games and doing some TV stuff and now trying this new podcast venture. So no regrets other than, you know, again, a couple decisions that I made along the way that I wish I could have a do-over. But I've thought more about some of the stuff that I've done and, you know, maybe some of the accolades that came in, you know, the ratings, you know, whether they were good or bad, honest to goodness, I'm not joking. It didn't mean a darn thing to me, but it is pretty cool to be recognized by, you know, your peers in the past and, you know, have some of those things. It's the memories and the things that people bring up all the time, you know, things that you did 19 years ago. My daughter just turned 19 years old.
Wow.
And I posted something on Facebook and there were probably 20 people that made a reference to Crack Baby. Crack Baby's 19 years ago, for goodness sake. Funny. You know, and my daughter even said, she goes, "Dad, do these guys all realize that like I'm 19 now and everything?" So, you know, are people always making reference to Mita and, you know.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that in a bit.
The march that we did, you know, with Matt for, Millen, you know, when we had it with Millen. So many silly things, but a lot of good memories. And I'm glad that, you know, a few people out there remember some of the silly things we did.
You know, it's no secret you're known for sports. And Bill McAllister and I went to Specs together in the same class. And we we created this fictional sports station that we wanted to create, and never did I dream that I was gonna, you know, come out of spec. Luckily, I think Bill got a job with 97 right out of the jump. But I wanted to ask you, because I know this talking to you, when you were going to Specs, WDFN was your station. How did you go from being a student to like, okay, now I'm rubbing elbows, now I am WDFN? Talk about that.
It was unbelievable. You know, I'm going to say the same thing. So they launched in the summer of 94. And after I got done listening to Drew and Mike, you know, doing all their OJ stuff, the coolest thing was driving to school and listening to the Fan and just thinking to myself, my gosh, how cool would this be? And that was a life goal. I'm not going to lie. That was something that I thought was probably 10 years away. But in all actuality, it was just a few years away. And I give all credit in the world to Greg Henson. And I think you and I talked about this during the documentary. I'm convinced that Greg doesn't get the credit that he deserves. I'm not just talking for me. I'm talking in general for making sports radio the vehicle that it is today in this market. I don't think Greg gets the credit he deserves. But I met Greg at opening day. 98, 99. I don't remember. And in typical Greg fashion, he walked up to me and he goes, "Hey, I heard your shows on that other station." I was like, "Oh, thanks, Greg. You know, I've listened to you for years." And typical Greg, he goes, "What the hell are you doing over there? Why don't you come work for me?" Okay. You know, I mean,
let go of my arm. Greg,
but right. Yeah. So, yeah, to be able to start working there, Ron, I was only 28 years old. To be able to start working there and do some weekend stuff and then do a show with Pate and then, you know, obviously have the long run that we did in middays with It Is What It Is. And, you know, finally to do mornings and afternoons with, you know, a guy who was legitimately a friend of mine. You know, I think, Ron, in this business, there are friends in the business and then there are friends.
Right.
And I've been fortunate to make some friends in the business. And I was very, very fortunate to make a real friend in Tom Kowalski. And to be able to work with him for a couple of years, you know, before his untimely passing was just unbelievable. And you know, doing afternoons on the Fan with him was just so much
fun.
You
know, it's really too bad that he's not around to see this Lions run. You know, God, would he have loved this? Are you kidding me?
Oh, my goodness. Oh, would have loved every second of it, you know. And he would have yelled at me for being a fan. That was the argument that we always had. Because I told him, I said, I'm sorry. I think both things can be true. I think you can be objective. Yeah. And I think you can be a fan. He's like, "No, you can't be a fan. Listen. Let me tell you something. Let me tell you." And it's like, no. You know, killer, that's the way it is. And listen and learn. I can hear it still. But, yeah, he would have loved every second.
Now, when you started the Fan, I think there was Estonian and Wojo were doing their thing. I think Greg and Jamie were doing their thing. I think Rob and Mark were doing Park. Who did you – for me, if I was in your shoes, I would have been totally like, you know, try to not to be a fanboy around Stoney. But did you – was there anybody specifically who you kind of – learned the most from, or maybe kind of took you and said, "Hey, this is how you do it, kid"?
No, you know what was different, Ron? And I don't mean any disrespect to any of these guys. I think everybody worked so hard to get to where they were at that I think everybody was just focused on the task at hand as opposed to, you know, let's you know, help this kid up or help that kid up. And I hope that doesn't come across as disrespectful because it isn't. I understand it. This was a venture. Everybody was up to their waist in a venture that everybody thought was going to be gone like that. I mean, if you remember, there were some pretty big names out there that said, "This is going to be gone in a couple of years. This isn't going to last." So I think everybody was so focused on the task at hand that maybe there wasn't the time to you know, grab the new kid by the scruff of the neck and everything. But I don't have anything derogatory to say about any of those guys, really. I wasn't there long when Mark and Rob were there.
Okay.
But, you know, the tenure that I worked under, and I think we had more success in that tenure than any other, was, you know, Jamie and Brady in the morning and me in middays and Jim Rome and then Stoney and Wojo, and we still had our specialty programming and things like that. And it was always fun to watch, you know, Art Regner have his rants. That was always a lot of fun before he moved on. And, you know, I drew the short straw and I had to do all those Lions post game shows, but it was what a special place to work. We didn't realize it at the time. We really didn't. And when we were all working at Fox 2, when I say we, I mean Jamie, Wojo, and myself, you know, did the Lions pregame show for so many years. We would wax poetically about those days at the Fan. And a lot of times that's a crazy thing about the good old days. You don't realize you're living in the good old days until you're out of the good old days.
Right.
And, those were the good old days, and I don't think any of us knew it.
You know, I don't think, and I've said this to other people off the air, is I don't think Jennifer Hammond gets enough credit to what she meant to the station early on. But talk to me from your perspective on the inside. How important was Don Swindell to that station?
Oh, my gosh. He was always had an idea. Always. I mean, just the simplest thing. I think, you know, for people that know him, he would get this twinkle in his eye. Right. He would get this twinkle in his eye and you knew something, you know, sarcastic was coming, something creative was coming. But no, you're right. I think Jen and let's not forget the late Sabrina.
Oh, my gosh.
It was a special place. You know, it really was. It was a special place. And Full of creative people, you know, certainly we lost a great one in Don not too long ago.
Yeah, no, for those who don't know, he was the voice behind, you know, the Stoney and Wojo theme song. And he was an old musician who got this job, and he took it to another level. He was imaging for DFN. You guys were the stars, no question. But that was the pace that kept all you guys together, in my view. You know.
Yeah, absolutely. And he always was quick to an idea. You could be having a conversation with him, and he'd get that gleam in his eye, and you're like, all right, what's going on with Swindell? And Don would be the first guy to admit it. Don, I liken Don to like a baseball player, right? Well, a baseball player is a really good baseball player if you hit 333, right? Right. Don would probably tell you one out of his three ideas worked, but he kept swinging. And like I said, that 333 guy will get you in the Hall of Fame. And as far as I'm concerned, Don's a Hall of Fame radio guy.
I loved his Claude Lemieux stuff. Oh, that was fantastic.
Yeah.
So was DFN your first job in radio? Was Toledo your first gig? How did that happen? How did you go from Specs to your first job? Talk about that.
You know what? I was, like everybody else, I put out a bunch of stuff, and I thought I was really close to getting a gig in South Bend, and then literally at the last minute, it wasn't meant to be. And, you know, I was heartbroken because I think I'm a hockey guy first, but boy, I love college football. And to be, in the backyard of college football in South Bend for your first gig would have been a lot of fun, but everything happens for a reason. I ended up in Toledo, like smack dab in the middle of an ownership change. And with the ownership change comes a management change. So I was one of the first hires by management there. It was the right place at the right time. So many times people, I don't think they give credit to being in the right place at the right time. I had a good stroke of luck being in Toledo in the summer of 1995 at that exact moment. So a lot of things came together where I was quickly able to get on the air in a multitude of ways. And I was able to quickly get into a broadcast booth.
Right.
And do sideline reportings for the Toledo Rockets, which I had a blast doing.
Oh, my gosh.
Football.
I can't imagine how cool that was.
You know, I had a chance to do sidelines and color and even play-by-play for a few games when our, you know, play-by-play guy did some television things. But it was perfect. Ron, I say this all the time. It was very difficult to leave Toledo. It was very difficult to leave Toledo. That's how much fun I had down in Toledo.
It's a lot of fun. It was
a special group of people.
I've done some cool things in radio broadcasting, but as far as the most fun I've had is I worked at a station called WSGM in Southwest Michigan, just a half hour north of South Bend, ironically enough. And the most fun I ever had in broadcasting is on Friday nights, I'd host a show called Friday Night Fever. And over there, high school football is huge. And sure. So you Benton Harbor, you got St. Joe, you got Lakeshore. There's just Baroda, Saugatuck, all that. That's huge. And so we would go on and we would take up cuts from touchdowns and we would do like these recaps where we would, you know, play the sound. And putting that together was just the most fun. And then going on the air and saying, you know, number 7 for Benton Harbor, put him over there and just playing a clip for the you know. And just doing that was so much fun. So I get that. But then...
Yeah.
How can you say no? Okay, I go from Toledo to now I'm going to go to the station that I love listening to. That is a no-brainer, right?
It was, yeah. I mean, it was no-brainer. And, you know, it's funny how life happens. I got in full-time, and then 3 weeks later I became a father. And so that was a big, you know, reason why. I knew that, you know, my son was coming, and, you know, now he's 24 years old.
Crazy.
And living off in L.A., so... I didn't know what I didn't know back then. And I think there's probably some good in that. You know, I think the older you get, you kind of see things coming a mile away in this business. Back then I didn't know what I didn't know, but, had a blast. And, you know, shortly thereafter, you know, I get asked to do some shows on a Friday night on Fox. And then they're like, hey, why don't you do some shows on Sunday? And then, hey, why don't you do all our hockey coverage? And hey, why don't you do our Lions pregame show? And To be able to do a column for the Detroit News for a couple of years was unbelievable.
Cool.
Because I mean, that was Sunday morning for me, is spreading the newspaper all across the floor and studying the stats and everything. So no, you're absolutely right. It you don't think about it while it's happening, but right. Even now, you know, I'm 53 years old and it's just like, holy crap, did I really do all that? You know, I mean, you sit back and you're like, that's pretty cool. So, yeah, it was a blast. And, boy, I had 12 great years at the Fan. It's, you know, it's unfortunate how it ended. We all saw it coming though. You know, when they made the decision not to move to FM, yeah. we knew, but yeah. Boy, it was fun while it lasted.
Well, I know you had fun doing this and you kind of mentioned it earlier, but, on December 9th, 2005, a lot of people still know Sean Bolegian from this. You organized an angry fan march at Ford Field. You wanted to fire Matt Millen. It's almost, when you look back at now and all the things that happened and transpired when under his watch, it almost seems like, man, if there's anyone who ever stole money at a job, it was Matt Millen. And look, he was a respected NFL analyst. And he came to Detroit, and it was almost like he OJ'd his career, didn't he?
Yeah. I'll tell you what, he's a nice guy, too.
Which is really, I mean that. Yeah.
He was a wonderful guy. He had no business being in that job, and I wish the Lions would have listened to me then because...
I know what I'm talking about.
For him to stay almost 3 years more, I mean, it led to the imperfect season. Ron, I'll be honest with you, though. I've said this many times, and I'll say it to you as well. I regret ever doing that. And I'll tell you why I regret doing that. Yeah, I'll tell you why I regret doing that. The way it was misconstrued really, to this day, bothered me. It was never about hating the Lions. It was never about, boycotting the Lions. It was never about being anti-Lion. It was telling the franchise to wake up that Mr. Ford, this guy is running your franchise into the ground. And, people misconstrued it. They misconstrued it. And there was a lot of heat that week, if you remember.
Sure.
There was a lot of pressure that week. And I think, unfortunately, there were some people in town as well that, thought that we were just trying to cause trouble and incite a riot and things like that. And so because of that, that's my regret from it. I knew what my intentions were. It sounds like you knew what the intentions were. I think the average fan knows out there what the intentions were. It was nothing more than to tell Mr. Ford and tell this franchise, this man is running this franchise into the ground. And they didn't listen. And it was, and the irony of ironies, September 24th, 2008, of all the people to kind of break the news that Matt Millen was getting fired, it was me. And the person that told me that news made that comment, kind of like, well, I think it's only right that maybe you can throw this out there and everything.
You should be the one to tell everybody.
That Friday morning for the news to come down that he was cleaning out his desk. But as I said, I mean, Ron, he got the 2006 draft. He got the 2007 draft. He got the 2008 draft. The damage that was already done was just made worse. It really was. So, but it was fun. It was a great memory. It's something that, I've kind of come to grips that that's going to be synonymous with me. But, boy, if I had a chance to do it over again, I don't think I would have done it. It ended up being more trouble than it was worth, to be honest with you.
Oh boy! Another thing you're known for at the Fan is Mita, men eating all the tasty animals. This is I had actually forgotten about this till I was doing some show prep for this show. But tell me about this, Sean. What was the genesis of this?
It was, I don't know if you remember, 2003, PETA was putting out these, like, just inflammatory, ads and everything. And I said, I've had enough. Like, stop it. You do what you want to do, but stop telling me and other people how to live our life. So we decided to start a Mita. And the first one, there were maybe 200 people in the parking lot at WDFN. A couple Lions actually came over because they heard about it. And I think they just wanted a free meal. That, Ron, honestly, I think maybe 250 people there, maybe. And then the next year it grew. And then the year after that it grew. And then finally in 2008, there were probably 5,000 people at the parking lot at CompuWare Arena. And we had so many different vendors handing out food. Like so many other ideas in this business, I think it's an idea that had a shelf life. And I think the shelf life, quite frankly, expired because you know as well as I do, I know this is going to sound disrespectful to salespeople. It's not. I think salespeople saw that as a big sell. Well, that's not something to sell.
Right.
If the local ma and pa place in your backyard, Ron, decide that they want to come out and donate 25 pounds of their own Italian sausage, well, you should let them donate 25 pounds right. of their Italian sausage. We don't have to charge them for donating 25 pounds of their Italian sausage. But the sales staff saw dollar signs. That's their job. I respect that. But that's not the type of event to try to do that. Sure. Not when people are bringing their own things and not when local mom-pop places are saying, I'll bring 1,000 wings or I'll bring 25 racks of ribs. So, I mean, think about the logic from that. I can't tell you how many times I had arguments with salespeople about that where I said, they brought 25 racks of ribs. You want to charge them for bringing 25 racks of ribs. Am I getting that straight? Well, you're mentioning them. Yes, because they brought 25 racks of ribs. This is a great event. It brings people together, sports fans meet. So I knew at that last one, that was probably the last one. We gave it one more go, but Ron, it was so corporate. It wasn't Mita. The spirit was gone.
It was not.
And they said that they wanted to continue it. And I said, go ahead. You don't have my name attached to it.
Not me.
And they said, well, we don't need your name. We can do Mita. This is for the radio station. I said, have a blast with it.
Yeah.
I said, I don't want anything to do with it. And of course it never happened. But it was fun. You know, could we do something like that today? Probably not. You know, I mean, I think there are too many different things that would need to fall into place to do something like that. But man, it was for that little run. It was a heck of a lot of fun.
Another thing that cracked me up preparing for this show, Sean, is I actually, cause I remembered it when I read up on it, is everybody knows the expression drinking the Kool-Aid. I mean, I'm drinking the Kool-Aid as it pertains to the Lions right now, but for a short time, Sean Belegian, he has always been a trendsetter, but you started getting people, instead of drinking the Kool-Aid, you got people to, because of your Lions postgame show, ironically enough, but eating the cornbread. Yeah. Where did this expression come from? Is this a family thing?
Yeah, you know what? Honestly, it was, I always, we're slaves to the Lions. We're just slaves to the Lions, and they are going to serve us, you know, bad Kool-Aid, and they're going to serve us bad cornbread and tell us how good it is. And we'll keep coming back to get more. And, you know, that was, during Camp Happy Times and Joey Blue Skies, you know, people still make reference to Joey Blue Skies, which is kind of funny. I'll never forget watching a game on one of the national games, and Troy Aikman goes, you know, in Detroit, they call him Joey Blue Skies. And I was like, hey, I know the guy that did that. So that was pretty funny. But yeah, boy, that decade of despair, gosh, that took years off my life. And, you know, then I said, you know, cider mill moments, and people still use cider mill moments to this day. You know, that moment in time on a Sunday where you know that nothing good's going to happen the rest of the Lions game, so you go escape to the local cider mill.
Yates, yeah.
And salvation lies with cider and donuts. So
it sure does.
Yeah, we still have some fun like that.
I'm telling you right now, I'm bringing back. I'm going to start using eating the cornbread. I'm bringing it back. I'll give you credit. I'll give you credit for it three times. After that, it belongs to me. That's how I treat radio.
That wouldn't be the first time. But it's a lot.
Eating the cornbread. Are you eating the cornbread for the Lions in 2024 or what?
100%. 100%. It is amazing the difference that a viable franchise can make, and having the right people in place. Ron, I've said it 1,000 times. I cannot stand people that do the, well, this franchise stinks and they're always going to stink.
Right.
It is such bad logic. And I don't think you're a history of sports if you say that. People thought that way about the dead things. And what happens? You get the right people in place. They hire the right people. And
now the Wings are known as champions. The Wings have a whole different reputation than they did when we were growing up.
the measuring stick for from 1995 till 2009. And the Golden State Warriors are another example. You hire the right people, they bring in the right people, and the Golden State Warriors kind of became the measuring stick. So I think that's exactly what Sheila Ford did. She brought in, you know, Brad Holmes and Dan Campbell, and these guys have been working so well together, and it's about bringing in the right people, and they've been able to bring in the right people. You know, it's a couple of weeks ago, it was a missed opportunity. It would have been great to go to the Super Bowl a year early. I don't know if I buy that stuff. I think Kansas City's a very beatable team, but they have a good nucleus, and I trust Brad Holmes to keep building around that nucleus, so it's going to be fun.
Last season, not this past season, but the season before that when they started 1-6, I had a lot of friends on Facebook just going down to the game, spending all this money, and I was like, when they were 1-6, that game where they went 2-6, that was the first game I had watched since Barry was in uniform. Like, I missed all the Calvin Johnson. I was done. I was Lions free, as they say. And I tuned into that game almost to poke fun of my friends, almost to get ammunition. And then they won the game, and they went 2-6. And then they went 3-6. And by the time they went 4-6, I was like, this feels different. How are they 1-6 to begin with? Because what I was seeing on the field was not anything I'd ever seen before. It was gradual for me, but I was sucked in almost because as a goof. I'm going to watch them as a goof. And I became a fan, and I got to tell you, I've never felt – When they were beating the Cowboys 38-3 or whatever it was back in 91, I never felt as confident as them winning as I do with this football team. It's never.
No, I feel the same way. And it's culture. It's culture. It's amazing. Ron, I can't tell you how many times I've been down there over the years where, I told this story a few weeks ago. Lomas and I, gosh, I want to say it was 2018. I don't remember. All those bad years run together. But we were walking out of Ford Field. It's like the first or second week of November. And honestly, you leave the locker room, and it's almost like, you know, you're leaving, a funeral. And we looked at each other. I'll never forget it. We're walking out back to our cars down at Ford Field, and we're like, we have 2 months of this.
Wow, yeah.
We have two more months of this. and I can't tell you how many times it was like that. Dan Campbell will never get enough credit. As much as we talk about it, I still contend he will never, ever get enough credit for changing the culture around here.
That
was the biggest battle, and by golly, and yes, I just used a statement from 1942.
By golly,
he changed the culture.
Now, as you're getting back to your, we could go off on a sports tangent. I love talking sports with you, but we were talking about the fan. Before we move on from the fan, could you talk about some? I'm asking you about pinch me moments, but what are some of your highlights as far as wow, this is and that you recall fondly today that happened while you were at 11:30 there.
You know, so many, the anniversary parties were always special. They were always special. You know, we brought in a bunch of fantastic guys, which was cool. And a lot of the sports figures locally were always cool. I mean, obviously doing a lot of the ice time shows during the Stanley Cup runs was unbelievable. Doing the draft shows with Stoney and I would go on the air at 11 o'clock back on draft Saturday, and we would do 11 to 7. And it was just geek juice because we would always joke about it. You know what, Ron? It wasn't anything different that I wouldn't be doing at my house, except this time I was on the radio with a guy like Stoney and getting paid for it. So many moments. I mean, really, so many incredible moments. And you know, little road trips that we took and special, you know, this was back in the day, Ron, where we used to actually have, radio nights at right. local bars and everything. And you used to do promotions where, you know, Miller would send you out 2-3 nights a week and everything. And man, I thought that was the coolest thing on earth. I'm not going to lie to you. So let me get this straight. You're going to pay me $300 to go hang out at a bar for 2 hours.
Okay.
Okay, you know, so it was a special time in an era that I think is unfortunately long gone.
Well, when talk about leaving WDFN, did you have another job or did you go to a job? Because like you had mentioned, the writing was on the wall when 1270 went FM and became 97.1. you guys and 11:30 didn't follow suit. It was kind of writing on the wall, but you stayed on a little bit. But when did you leave, and what was your next gig after DFN?
So in the summer of 2010, when it became apparent to me that they weren't going to compete, I thought I was doing the right thing. I told them, like, literally, I walked into our general manager's office and I walked into our OM and I said, I'm leaving next summer. Just so you know, there's going to be no surprise. I'm going to honor my contract, but I want you to know, like, a year in advance, I'm leaving. So then 2 weeks beforehand, when I reminded them of that conversation, they acted like it was the first time they heard it. And how many times have we been there, right? Anybody who's been in this business.
What do you mean you're leaving?
It is amazing how management sometimes doesn't remember things. It's amazing how that works. So I told them, I said, well, okay, well, then consider this my 2 week notice. And I think they thought I was bluffing. I really do. I think,
or
they
maybe
I was
a money thing
and,
or something, right?
Yeah, and no, I was done. Like Ron, like I, like enough. You know, I mean, honestly, enough. And the funny thing about it is, so on Sunday, 3 days before I was supposed to leave, Killer called me, and he begged me to do one more year, and I said it's not happening. We got into a massive argument.
Oh my gosh.
Massive argument, right? And after about 10 minutes after he hung up on me, he called me back. We kissed and made up. And basically, the management didn't know this, but he got me to say, I'll do one more year. And there was something that we were kind of ogling for that doesn't need to be mentioned now. Killer died the next morning. So I never had that conversation with management, because when Killer passed away, I didn't feel the need to have that conversation. But because he passed away, I decided to give them an extra couple of months. And when a couple of months was over, it was time to move on. It was, you know, especially after your partner dies and like a legitimate friend of yours dies, it was just time to do something else. You know, at the time, it's kind of crazy. I didn't know what I was going to be doing. I knew there were opportunities out there. I was calling some hockey games and I was kicking around the idea of doing some National Hockey League games, which, you know, eventually I got a chance to, you know, call some, and that, you know, no matter what happens the rest of my career, I can say I called games in the NHL, you know, that's a win. So, there was about a 2 month span where honestly I was doing Wayne State football. I was doing a little of this and doing a little of that, but I didn't know what came next. And then my old station in Grand Rapids called me and said, we'd love for you to do the afternoon show and you can do it out of your house in Northville. And, you know, we have the technology, we can make it work. And so I did that for a few years and it was a fun time. And, you know, working with Drew and working with a guy by the name of Grant, it was a fun time. But yeah, it's sad, you know, because I wish things could have been different at the Fan, but, you know, they were never ever going to be in it seriously. You know, I should have known it.
So how did, because I know, didn't you intern at WGR when you were a student at Specs, or am I wrong about that?
It was literally my first job in Detroit. So when Henson saw me, I had just started doing weekends at JR. I was doing at the time, you know, my stuff down in Toledo, and then weekends after football and basketball season, I started working at JR. So I was there a couple months and Henson heard me and asked me to come to the Fan. And so I did. And then in 2016, they called me and, you know, they had just landed the Lions and they said, we'd like you to come be a part of this. And I said, yeah. And I've known the program director for many years, Mike Wheeler. He helped get me into this business. And so, yeah, they brought me on board in 2016. And, you know, I ended up at JR for almost 7.5 years. It's amazing. Time just flies.
Yeah, you did a show with Darren McCarty. Talk a little bit about your time working with Darren on WGR talking about hockey. Is there a better gig in radio?
It was pretty cool, you know, and Darren's the same way. You know, people forget Darren, it was born just over the border over in Leamington. So growing up for him was the same way that it was for a lot of us, listening to JR, listening to JP in the morning. And, you know, JP just seems so larger than life. Yeah. We haven't seen a guy like JP since his passing, I don't think we'll see a guy like JP. Really.
I think Drew Lane comes the closest, probably.
I agree with you. If there was anybody, it would be Drew Lane. But certainly, I mean, for WJR, that's been a void for, you know, almost 30 years. I mean, really, it has. And but, you know, listening to the Red Wings games, listening to the Tiger games. So to be able to do a show with Darren and then eventually to – have a small part on the morning show and then to be able to do a show with Lomas, it was pretty cool. But, you know, all good things come to an end, and that's the business.
Well, so I do want to ask you about your mornings at JR. That's a big difference going from a weekly to a daily show. And you were getting up early. I should have said no. Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
I should have said no. To be honest with you, Ron, I thought I was doing somebody a favor. Somebody kind of asked me for a favor, and I thought that I was doing somebody a favor.
It doesn't seem like it was right for you, just because that.
No, it wasn't a good fit at all. Yeah. It wasn't a good fit at all. I mean, no.
When I heard about it, it made no sense to me. I'll be honest, just because.
No, I have no problem saying it, but as I said, I've always tried to be the guy. If you ask me to go do something, I'm going to give it my best shot. It wasn't a good fit. I should have said no. I thought I was doing somebody a favor, and it didn't work.
You know what was a good fit? You know what was a good fit is you and Lomas Brown. I know you left to do your own thing, but that had to be fun, the short time you did work with Lomas. Because much like Darren McCarty, but Lomas Brown is just full of life. That guy is a great, great guy. By all accounts.
He is what you hear is what you get. He's just a fantastic guy. And, you know, we had a lot of fun things planned, and, you know, we had some barbecues over my house and things like that. And we're planning a lot of events, and, you know, it's our business. You know, I thought that was something that, you know, to be honest with you, Ron, I was going to do for the next 5-10 years and then kind of sail off into the sunset, but it wasn't meant to be. I get it. I think anybody in this business, Ron, you can't be mad at situations that happen. We know what we got ourselves into. You can regret situations but you can't be mad at situations. No. You know, I mean,
it's the times we live in, I think.
Yeah, I get it. It's not, I don't take, you know, I'm not ticked off about anything. You know, like I said a few minutes ago, I think there are things that you probably shouldn't have done. And that's okay. I can be the guy that can raise my hand and said I should have said no to that. But I'm never gonna be mad at somebody that said, "Hey, nothing personal, and this isn't performance related." But you know, we have to make a financial decision. How do you get mad at that? You wish everybody all the best, and you know, you move on to something else. So
and you did.
That's the way I feel. I'm not being PC. That's like
right.
All the best, guys. I don't wish ill will against
you.
I'm
not
going to
talk.
Time to go do something else.
My favorite, I mean, WJR. I mean, that's JP because of, you know, and then working with Dick Hafner and people like Guy Gordon.
Oh,
and
Dick's the best.
And, you know, don't even start me on Frank Beckman. Don't get enough respect as far as I'm concerned. But it is, you know, to me, what it once was, because it's not, no disrespect to anybody who's there, but WJR isn't what it was. It's just not. And I don't mean that disrespectfully. I think a lot of that has to do with the time we live in and the decisions that are made. But nevertheless, enough about that, because I'm not white Mike Wallace. I'm not looking to jack anybody up. You moved on and you went to, I got to tell you, I'm excited about your podcast. It's because right when you started sharing it on social media, I was like, that's a great name for a podcast. Off the air. Yeah. It's such a twist. First off, before we get to your podcast, how did you come up with that name? Because it's just brilliant.
Ron, thank you. I really think that it hit me like a ton of bricks, like literally the day after everything happened at WJR. I honestly, it was like, okay, that's probably it for me in radio. And like, I'm going to say it again. That's okay. Like, I'm fine with it. You know, I got 29 years in, man. You know, there aren't a lot of people that can say that. So, you know, I'm going to look at the positive in each and every situation. And that's the way that I look at it. So I had a couple of people reach out to me and, you know, say that, you know, you have, you've done a good job of, you know, making a name for yourself and all that stuff. And Ron, I've never taken myself seriously. I'll never take myself serious. So, you know, the self-doubt in me was, you know, is this going to be successful? I mean, how many people are going to listen to it? Like, honestly, I think whether people want to admit it or not, in this business, insecurity runs rampant anyway.
Yeah.
But I honestly, I think maybe 15 years ago, I took myself way too seriously. I'll be the first guy to admit it. And then I started to practice what I preach, because I think in this business, what do we talk about? We talk about things that other people do.
Right.
Why exactly would I be egotistical about right. that? You know? So, you know, you have a reality check. And, but I had a few people suggest to me, and people who I really respect, that this is something that could be successful. And why don't you just do it for fun? And Ron, I'm doing things my way. And if I want to talk to some hockey guy for a half hour, I don't have to have my boss screaming at me, why are you talking to this guy? People can jump in. People can, you know, listen. And I have a list of so many guys coming up in the next few weeks that I'm going to be talking to. It's pretty cool. Pretty much everybody that I reached out to was like, dude, of course I'll do it and everything. And, you know, thankfully we've been able to pick up some sponsors and working on some more and everything. But
I love that I'm you
humbled.
Said that.
I'm humbled, that. Ron. I really am. I'm humbled.
Because that's the thing is in different jobs I've had in radio, and I remember doing a morning show on a country station, and I'd come up with 10 questions that I wanted to ask, say, Trace Adkins or Shania Twain or whatever the case may be. And they're like, yeah, nope, you got 5 minutes. That's why I love doing this podcast, because whether I'm talking to you or a musician, we can go on. I mean, I've had podcasts that I think Mike Halloran was on for like 2 hours. 2.5 hours. Dennis Frawley from back in ABX, he was on. So I love the forum that you can just lead where the conversation, there's no time limit. And people, you know, yep. I get people say all the time, it's like, I don't listen to you in one sitting if it's too long, but I'll come back to it. And that's what I love about these podcasts. And I'm sure you're going to find success with that. I'm glad to hear you getting some sponsors. That's cool. But what for people who haven't tuned in or have tuned in, what should they expect from this show Off the Air with Sean Balesian moving forward? Is it just going to be sports? Or is it going to be what are you going to have on there?
There's going to be different things. I think, you know, at the beginning where it's more stick what you know, I think, especially with the Lions being on the run that they have. So we have a few different shows under something called, you know, Unsyndicated. You know, Off the Air is kind of the flagship where we're going to be talking about a little bit of everything. And sometimes, you know, I'm going to have my buddy Blake join me, who does such a great job. He's one of Mitch's producers, and he's the producer of Sports Rap at 760. And I think the kid knows his stuff, and he's a great guy. So I wanted him involved in this. And, you know, the one that I'm having a lot of fun with is What the Puck. And, you know, we're gonna be talking to, you know, guys from yesteryear. We had a great conversation with Ron Duguay, and I have
That's so cool. You
know, some conversations coming up with some guys that I know, and I don't want to give too much away, but I have a few guys locked in. I mean, not
I got
only
a
guys
request.
From yesteryear.
I would love to Brad Park.
I can work on that.
That
can,
would be awesome.
I can work on that. So, but no, to your point, there, you know, there are a lot of guys from yesteryear that I've already talked to. And there are a lot of guys, quite frankly, that are playing right now that I'm going to get on. So, I mean, that's the cool thing about it to me, Ron, is, you know, I've reached out to so many guys and they were like, what do you need me to do? What do you need me to do? When do you need me? And, you know, both current and former players. So that's pretty cool. And, you know, still calling games, still doing some stuff for state champs. You know, I'll do Wayne State in the fall. And awesome. So, yeah, just having a blast, man, having a blast.
I have to ask you this, and anybody who follows you on social media, obviously you're a Red Wings fan. Your roots run deep. How did you become a Montreal Canadiens fan? A kid from Detroit.
You know
how did that happen?
Yeah, you know what? So my grandfather lived in Stony Point, Ontario. And just over the bridge, and about a half hour kind of north, like what is now known as the Lakeshore area. And growing up, you know, watching the Habs and watching it with all my relatives there, a lot of Habs fans. We just, you know, that was a team. I thought Larry Robinson was larger than life, and you know, having the opportunity to go there and see a bunch of family that I have there and everything, it just. it cultivated when I was a kid. So yeah, so cool. Go Habs, go, right?
That's so cool. But before I ask my last question or so, is can you name one thing that you're most proud of over your radio broadcasting career? I know that's kind of a loaded question, but can you think of maybe one
you
could share with me?
Can I pick two?
Absolutely.
I'm going to pick two.
Sure.
I think having the opportunity to call a game in the National Hockey League, that is every kid's, like me, dream come true. Like it's, you know, I'll take that to my grave with me. And being a Heisman voter, being named a Heisman voter
that's back cool,
in
man.
2009 is awesome. You know, those are little kid things. You know what I mean? Those are really little kid things. And what I mean by that is, you know, 10-year-old Sean would have gone crazy over that. You know, I was the kid watching Hockey Night in Canada and watching the Heisman presentation. So to be able to do both of those things, I think, you know, one and two there.
Sean, before we wrap, in your opinion, and, you know, you can be as PC as you want or you can be as harsh as you want. Everybody's opinion varies. But one of my last questions I like to ask folks is, in your opinion, and we've kind of touched on this because you still are technically, even though you're not employed right now by a terrestrial, you're still in the biz. What is your opinion of the state of terrestrial radio today in 2024?
I hate to say it because I think a lot of times people might misconstrue this, Ron, and think that, you know, it's sour grapes or whatever. I don't know how else to tell you it isn't sour grapes. It's not good. I worry about the long-term viability. Nobody's listening to the radio anymore. I think the younger generation has zero interest in the radio. And, you know, we're moving into different mediums now. And I hope that radio stays around forever. But when I say that, I say it for the nostalgic, romantic reasons.
Yeah.
You know, the things that you and I talked about early in the show. I don't know how radio can sustain the next 10 years. And I don't think 10 years is being exaggerative either. I don't think that radio can sustain the next 10 years.
Not without reinventing itself. Not without reinventing itself.
Exactly. Exactly. You know. If they keep down this road, somebody turn out the lights 10 years from now.
Don Meredith. Turn out the lights. The party's over.
there's going to have to be something different. The problem is, and I ran into this at the Fan, like we were talking about earlier, they face so many challenges before they think that they're too big to fail.
Yeah.
And that was what we were told at the Fan. Well, they've spent this money. They went and got all the teams. No, nothing's worked. Well, FM was a game changer. And I think, unfortunately, there are far too many radio people right now that are taking that mentality. Yeah, I heard this before. Remember when XM was going to put us out of business, et cetera, et cetera. I think there's always going to be a need for local radio. There's also always going to be a need for guys like Ron Robinson or Dick Hafner, you know, to give you the local news. I just don't think it's going to be anything like it is right now.
We talked about your podcast, but what's next for Sean Bolesian?
I don't know. And it's pretty cool. Honestly, it's pretty cool. You know, I've had the opportunity to go to other places. My roots are here. This is where I'm staying. You know, we're going to do this and I'm going to keep, you know, doing my stuff for state champs. And there's another little TV opportunity that I'm not at liberty to say. I'll just say there's cool. A TV opportunity where I might be doing some stuff, but, Ron, I always used to be one of those guys when I got in the business, especially when I was in my 20s still, I always used to say, I'm going to be like Ernie Harwell. I'm going to work until, you know, I'm 85, 90, whatever the case may be. Ron, your priorities change as you get older. I don't want to say the second that I can retire, I'm going to retire. How about 10 seconds later? You know, I want to enjoy life. This business has taken up, you know, many, many hours for me and oftentimes 7 days a week, especially in the fall. You know, I mean, you work 7 days a week in the fall. You just do. That's part of the gig. And, when it's time, I'll know it's time and you can find me at some, dive somewhere in the Florida Keys. Like when you're driving down Highway 1, don't be surprised if you see me sitting on a stool, sucking on a Corona and lime.
Was that Sean Belegian? Was that Sean Belegian? I thought I saw Sean Belegian.
There's a really good chance it's going to be Sean Belegian. So, yeah.
Sean, I want to thank you for coming on, sharing your broadcast story, my friend. It's been a blast. Thank you.
Anytime. It's a great chat with you, my friend. Continued success.
Thank you. Thanks again to Sean Belegian, and thank you for checking out Radio Days, the podcast. Today's podcast, again, is sponsored by Radio Days, 101 Years of Radio, a new documentary series about the history of radio. You could hear that story from those who lived it. You can also watch this entire five-part series on the free streaming service called Reveal, that's R-E-V-E-E-L, or on demand at Vimeo. Find more about that at my website, ronrobinsonstudios.com. Today's show is produced by Ron Robinson Studios. Head over to ronrobinsonstudios.com, where you can also hear previous episodes of this podcast, or streamcast, as it were, as well. Also, if you'd like to learn more about the aforementioned documentary about the history of radio, Radio Days, 101 Years of Radio, click on the Radio Days movie under the Documentaries tab at ronrobinsonstudios.com. Thanks for checking out the show. Hope you enjoyed it. Until next time.
You can't go! All the plants are gonna die!